Envision this. You're a primary care provider in a group practice, and today you're seeing a 17-year-old female that has concerns about her acne. She tells you, "I can deal with a little bit of acne, but this is too much." She says with an embarrassed look toward her mother, "I've reached the point where I don't really like to go out because of my face. I'm a senior, and I don't want to look like this at graduation." She informs you that she washes her face daily with ordinary soap with no improvement. You examine her face, and you observe that she has severe pustular acne with significant inflammation. You decide your patient would benefit from oral antibiotic treatment, and you wonder, what antimicrobial agent will you choose, and how will you discuss the side effects with your patient? Welcome to Audio Bricks. This is Ed Barnes breaking down the protein synthesis inhibitors in your ears. After completing this section, you will be able to 1. Describe the two classes of protein synthesis inhibitors based on their ribosomal targets and chemical parent structures and source. 2. Describe the mechanism of action and targets of 30S and 50S ribosome-inhibiting antibiotics, or RIAs. 3. Describe the major mechanism of resistance of bacteria against 30S RIAs and 50S RIAs. 4. Explain why aminoglycosides are potently bactericidal in nature, but the tetracyclines and the 50S RIAs are mostly bacteriostatic. 5. Describe the clinical uses for protein synthesis inhibitors and list common adverse reactions. Part 1. What are protein synthesis inhibitors? Antibiotics work by halting essential cellular processes to kill bacteria. Broken down into its roots, the word antibiotic is interpreted as opposing life. This trait can be beneficial against such living things as pathogenic bacteria, which endanger us. Like our own cells, bacteria synthesize proteins using ribosomes, which are located in the cytoplasm. Prokaryotes have 70S ribosomes, where S stands for Svedberg units. Additionally, the 70S ribosome is comprised of two subunits, one small and one large. The small subunit is 30S, while the large subunit is 50S. Ribosomes also contain the A, P, and E sites, where individual amino acids are loaded and bonded. Protein synthesis inhibitor antibiotics can interact with the A, P, and E sites or other parts of the ribosome to inhibit or kill bacteria. Protein synthesis inhibitors can be divided into two classes based on which subunit they target. So there are 30S and 50S ribosome inhibiting antibiotics, or 30S RIAs and 50S RIAs. Let's talk first about the types of 30S protein synthesis inhibitors. These are aminoglycosides and tetracyclines. Aminoglycosides and tetracyclines are two important members of the 30S RIAs. Structurally, aminoglycosides are composed of two or more amino sugars bonded to an aminocyclotyl nucleus. And the various aminoglycosides have different amino sugars. The first aminoglycoside was streptomycin, and it was isolated from Streptomyces griseus. Subsequent aminoglycosides discoveries included neomycin, gentamicin, tobramycin, and amikacin. Each were either isolated from different bacteria or developed as a semisynthetic derivative. Notably, gentamicin was isolated from Micromonospora pauperia in 1963, which led to the ophthalmic and topical form of the drug. Most of the aminoglycosides can be administered intravenously. Tetracyclines were introduced during the antibiotic era of the 1950s and were known for their broad-spectrum activity against bacteria. However, soon after the discovery of tetracyclines, bacteria developed resistance against them. By the 1960s and 1970s, the second-generation tetracyclines, doxycycline and minocycline, were developed with greater antibacterial and pharmacological properties. They are still widely used today. Like many other antibiotics, tetracyclines contributed to the necessity for antimicrobial stewardship. or the controlled evidence-based usage of antibiotics to control growth of antibiotic resistance. To target resistant bacterial strains such as methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA, and carbapenem-resistant Enterobacteriaceae, CRE, a glycyclocycline, a tetracycline derivative named tigecycline, was developed and approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, in 2006. Tigecycline is often used for these strains and other antibiotic-resistant bacteria. Let's pause for a quick quiz. How is tigecycline unique from the other tetracyclines? Tigecycline is unique because it is effective against drug-resistant bacteria. Moving on now to the types of 50S protein synthesis inhibitors. These are chloramphenicol and oxazolidinones. Chloramphenicol, macrolide, lincosamide, and streptogramin are also known as the MLS family, and oxazolidinones are important members of the 50S RIAs. Chloramphenicol was isolated from Streptomyces venezuelae in 1949 and widely used in the 1950s. Unfortunately, chloramphenicol had notable side effects including aplastic anemia, leukemogenicity, and gray baby syndrome, which eventually caused a dramatic decline in its use, especially in developed nations. Due to its availability and low cost, chloramphenicol can still be seen in developing countries. Members of the MLS family of drugs have different chemical structures and are considered distinct antibiotic families. However, the three groups are often bundled together due to their similar effects on the 50S ribosome, preventing the addition of amino acids to growing polypeptides during protein synthesis. Important macrolides include erythromycin, clarithromycin, and azithromycin. The lincosamide of interest is clindamycin. Streptogramins include the two synergistic drugs, difluprostine and quinupristine. Due to their similar mechanisms of actions, MLS drugs are often used against the same spectrum of bacteria and can be susceptible to the same mechanism of resistance. The first FDA-approved and clinically useful oxazolidinone was linezolid. It was developed through the 1990s in response to increasing bacterial resistance to other antibiotics, especially in gram-positive cocci. Bacterial resistance to other 50S RIAs does not affect oxazolidinones since multiple mutations of specific gene targets are required, thus reducing spontaneous resistance. Clinically, linezolid is reserved for bacterial resistance to other antibiotics. Here's another quiz. What was linezolid specifically developed for? Linezolid was developed to combat bacterial resistance gained after the introduction of older antibiotics. Bacteria require multiple mutations of a gene to resist linezolid, making it highly unlikely for spontaneous resistance to develop. Part 2. How do protein synthesis inhibitors work? During protein translation, the 30S subunit contains an aminosyl tRNA, which contains an appropriate amino acid that matches the mRNA codon. The 30S subunit itself is composed of 16S rRNA and 21 other proteins. The 50S subunit is important for forming the peptide bond between amino acids in protein synthesis and is composed of the 23S rRNA and the 5S rRNA. The 23S rRNA contains peptidyltransferase, which is the enzyme that forms the peptide bonds between amino acids. 30S and 50S RIAs directly interfere with the structure and enzymes that we have discussed to halt protein synthesis, i.e., protein synthesis inhibitors. This is a selective inhibition. Note that eukaryotic ribosomes are not composed of 30S or 50S subunits, so protein synthesis inhibitor antibiotics do not affect whole cell protein synthesis. However, this does not exclude 30S and 50S RIAs from having toxic side effects. For example, aminoglycosides are known to have a narrow therapeutic index, meaning that their therapeutic concentration range is close to or overlaps their toxic concentration range. Because of this, aminoglycosides are generally confined to inpatient use with careful monitoring. Let's investigate the 30S mechanism of action. Tetracyclines act on the 16S rRNA to prevent the binding of aminoacyl tRNA, which halts the initiation of protein synthesis by preventing the start codon from building. Their mechanism of action is reversible, which makes tetracycline a bacteriostatic inhibitor, however, and is based on selective concentrations in susceptible bacteria. Aminoglycosides also target the 16S rRNA, notably the ACE site for aminoacyl tRNA binding. However, aminoglycosides disrupt translational proofreading of the amino acids, causing premature truncation or inaccurate translation of proteins. Aminoglycosides' specific mechanism of action makes them bactericidal to certain bacterial species, meaning they kill them. Bactericidal is contrasted with bacteriostatic, which is defined as only preventing bacterial reproduction rather than causing their death. Protein mistranslation can produce abnormal, non-functional ribosomes, causing irreversible inhibition and bacterial death. Other mistranslated proteins can also be incorporated into the bacterial cell membrane, resulting in lysis. Notably, aminoglycosides are the only protein synthesis inhibitor drug that have bactericidal properties, while the rest are mostly bacteriostatic. How about another quiz? Are tetracyclines considered bacteriostatic or bactericidal? Tetracyclines are bacteriostatic because their mechanism of action is restricted to only halting protein synthesis, which does not cause bacterial death. Moving on to the 50S mechanism of action. Each of the 50S RIAs interacts with a unique component of the 50S subunit. Their various mechanisms of actions are as follows. Chloramphenicol binds to the 23S rRNA to interrupt peptidyl transferase. Macrolides and clindamycin interfere with protein elongation by binding to the 23S rRNA and blocking the translocation of tRNA across the A, P, and E sites of the ribosome, resulting in release of incomplete protein. The streptogramins, dalfopristin and quinupristin, work together to bind to different sites of the 23S rRNA to block translation. Linezolid binds to the interphase of the 30S and 50S subunits to prevent initiation complex formation by blocking the first peptide bonding step. Its mechanism is unique to protein initiation, so linezolid is unaffected by bacterial resistance that blocks protein elongation. This allows linezolid to be free of cross-resistance that affects other protein synthesis inhibitors. Let's stop here for a quiz. What rRNA on the 50S subunit do most 50S RIAs bind to? The common site of action for chloramphenicol, macrolides, clindamycin, and streptogramins is a 23S rRNA. The 23S rRNA contains peptidyl transferase, which plays a pivotal role in protein synthesis, making it a valuable target for antibiotics. Now that we understand how protein synthesis inhibitors work, let's investigate the most effective time to use this category of antibiotics. Since the mechanisms of protein inhibitors rely on the activity of ribosomes, their effectiveness is directly related to ribosomal expression. Bacteria upregulate ribosomes during rapid growth and replication. Therefore, protein inhibitors are most effective during the acute stage of the infection when the bacteria are actively dividing at a high rate. This makes sense because if bacteria were not actively expressing ribosomes, protein synthesis inhibitors would have fewer targets to exhibit their effects. Therefore, 30S and 50S RIA activity is directly related to the number of ribosomes and, in turn, bacterial growth rate. Protein synthesis inhibitors can also be used in combination therapy with other antibiotic agents. the effectiveness of protein synthesis inhibitors can be amplified in combination with other antibiotic agents that work synergistically. Synergistic combinations of antibiotics may be used to 1. Achieve a more potent killing effect, even in lower levels, between two bactericidal drugs. 2. Achieving a killing effect between two bacteriostatic drugs. 3. Prevent the emergence of resistant organisms during therapy. Or 4. Broaden the antibacterial spectrum in presumed infections in empirical therapy pending culture results. The rule of thumb for synergistic combination is two bactericidal antibiotics targeted at different sites. One facilitates the other's actions. For example, aminoglycosides require cell entry into the cytoplasm, which makes them dependent on cell wall penetration. Beta-lactams and glycopeptides are classes of drugs that can interrupt cell wall synthesis, which can enhance aminoglycoside entry into the cell when used together. Another benefit of combination therapy is that it addresses more than one of mechanisms of action, which reduces the likelihood of pre-existing or developing bacterial resistance. Note that developing resistance to multiple mechanisms is inherently more unlikely because the chances are lower for the bacteria to develop multiple simultaneous mutations. This is important in clinical situations in which critically ill patients cannot wait for laboratory tests to identify the specific antibiotic treatment. In these scenarios, combination therapy can be used as a shotgun approach to maximize empiric treatment success. Combination therapy is also effective in prolonged treatment of complicated infections and in immunocompromised patients to prevent the bacterial population from developing resistance over time. Part 3. How do bacteria resist protein synthesis inhibitors? There are several ways that bacteria can resist protein synthesis inhibitors. Bacterial resistance can be intrinsic, acquired, or transmissible. Intrinsic resistance is pre-existing bacterial resistance prior to antibiotic exposure, while acquired describes resistance that is gained after exposure. Transmissible resistance is transferable between bacteria, often by horizontal gene transfer of plasmids. Common acquired and transmissible mechanisms of resistance include enzymatic inactivation, target site alteration, and efflux pumps. Let's start with enzymatic inactivation. Bacteria are capable of changing the antibiotic itself. They can produce enzymes, for example, phosphotransferase or adenylyl transferase, that inactivate protein synthesis inhibitors by modifying their chemical structure. Gram-negative organisms responsible for healthcare-associated infections have been well documented for spreading enzymes that inactivate acylate aminoglycosides to prevent their interaction between the 16S rRNA. How about target site alteration? Bacteria can decrease the affinity of their own ribosomes for protein synthesis inhibitors. For example, methylation of parts of the 50S subunit can reduce the binding capability of certain 50S RIAs. Specifically, gram-positive bacteria can transfer erythromycin ribosome methylation genes, which alter the 23S rRNA. Changing this target site creates resistance not only to macrolides, but also to the rest of the MLS family, including clindamycin and lincosamide, due to their shared target site. Finally, efflux pumps. Bacteria can actively transport protein synthesis inhibitors out of their cytoplasm to reduce antibiotic activity. Remember that protein synthesis inhibitors need to act on the ribosome within the cytoplasm to be effective. Tetracyclines have been known to be susceptible to efflux pumps due to the TET-A efflux pump protein. This antiport pump inserts into the cell membrane to pump tetracycline out of the protons inside the cell. Tetracyclines, however, remain effective against some zoonotic species. Efflux pumps can target a specific drug or multiple drugs and are commonly found in many bacteria today. Let's try another quiz. Which resistance mechanism is most applicable to aminoglycosides? Enzymatic inactivation is most applicable to aminoglycosides. Healthcare-associated bacteria have been known to develop enzymes that inactivate aminoglycosides through acylation. Part 4. When are protein synthesis inhibitors used? Remembering the types of protein synthesis inhibitors discussed, aminoglycosides, tetracyclines, chloramphenicol, and oxazolidinones, or the MLS family. Know that each has a different mechanism of action with an accompanying different method of resistance. Taking this idea one step further, bacteria can be resistant to some protein synthesis inhibitors, but not to others. Due to the differing resistance to protein synthesis inhibitors, each drug has a unique spectrum of activity. Aminoglycosides have a broad range of activity across gram-negative organisms, especially the aerobic species, including Pseudomonas and Enterobacteriaceae. They also have some activity against aerobic gram-positive organisms like Staphylococcus aureus, Streptococci, and Enterococci, but are often insufficient as monotherapy and therefore used in combination with other antibiotics. Note that aminoglycosides are ineffective against intracellular and anaerobic bacteria. The parent aminoglycoside streptomycin is still used as a second-line treatment against mycobacterian tuberculosis and has favorable activity against zoonotic pathogens like Yersinia pestis and Francisella. Clinically, aminoglycosides are reserved for serious infections due to their toxicity. Tetracyclines are considered broad-spectrum and have activity against many aerobic gram-negative and gram-positive organisms. They are particularly effective against zoonotic and atypical pathogens like Coxiella, Brucella, Yersinia, Chlamydia, and Mycoplasma pneumoniae. Additionally, doxycycline is a first-line treatment against vector-borne pathogens Rickettsia and Borrelia. Tetracycline, doxycycline, and minocycline are commonly used to treat severe pustular acne. Tigecycline is unaffected by the efflux pumps, so it can be used against especially resistant bacteria such as CRE, MRSA, and vancomycin-resistant enterococci, or VRE. Chloramphenicol spectrum of activity spans a broad range of gram-positive and gram-negative organisms, including anaerobes. It can penetrate deep tissue and the blood-brain barrier. However, due to its harsh toxicity, chloramphenicol use has drastically declined in the United States as a reserve to alternative treatment for meningitis, like Neisseria meningitidis or Streptococcus pneumoniae. It can also be used in Rocky Mountain spotted fever caused by Rickettsia when less toxic agents cannot be used. Let's pause here for another quiz. Which protein synthesis inhibitor is reserved for alternative treatment of meningitis and Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and why? Chloramphenicol is reserved as alternative treatment for meningitis and Rocky Mountain spotted fever because of its toxic side effects. The MLS family spectrum of activity generally includes gram-positive cocci and intracellular organisms. Gram-negative bacteria exhibit intrinsic resistance to MLS antibiotics due to sophisticated cell walls, preventing hydrophobic MLS permeability. Clinically, macrolides are used in atypical pneumonias like chlamydophila, mycoplasma, and legionella, and gram-positive cocci in patients with penicillin allergies. Clindamycin is used against anaerobic infections above the diaphragm and aerobic gram-positive cocci. So how do we quantify the effectiveness of these drugs? In looking at the effectiveness of protein synthesis inhibitors, minimum inhibitory concentrations and minimum bactericidal concentrations are the metrics used. When quantifying the bacterial susceptibility to particular drugs, the minimum inhibitory concentration, or MIC, is a widely used metric. The MIC is defined as the lowest concentration needed of an antibiotic to prevent the growth of bacteria. Furthermore, the MIC is categorized into susceptible, intermediate, and resistant breakpoints. These breakpoints are set by governing bodies to help determine whether a strain is resistant to a specific drug. MIC can be thought of as a way to determine if an antibiotic is bacteriostatic. To determine if an antibiotic is bactericidal, the minimum bactericidal concentration, or MBC, is an analogous metric and is defined as the lowest antibiotic concentration required to kill a bacteria. Antibiotic susceptibility testing is based on the in vitro pharmacodynamic criteria of MIC. The goal of antimicrobial susceptibility testing is to predict the in vivo success of antibiotic therapy. The susceptibility tests do not always predict the in vivo response due to drug disruption, serum versus organs, interstitial fluids, host factors like immunity, walled-off abscesses or pus, or treatment-induced bacterial resistance. Antibiotic susceptibility tests are performed in vitro and measure the growth response of an isolated organism to an antibiotic. After a significant isolate has been identified, the organism may be tested against a battery of antibiotics to help determine the appropriate therapy. Testing may include serial dilution methods, auger dilution, gradient diffusion using E-strips, or the Kirby-Bauer disc diffusion. In the latter method, antibiotics are inoculated onto a disc and placed on an auger plate where the patient's sample was placed to grow, known as culturing the bacteria. Bacterial growth is either inhibited by the antibiotic, that means the antibiotic is effective, or it continues to grow around the antibiotic, meaning the antibiotic is ineffective. In pharmacodynamics, we have some measure of the activity of the drug MIC for the pathogen in question. The MIC and MBC have long been used clinically in choosing an antimicrobial regimen. Although they are very useful information, several limitations exist. Susceptible isolates respond appropriately to therapy about 90% of the time. Resistant isolates, or infections treated with appropriate antibiotics, respond about 60% of the time. Newer pharmacodynamic studies have demonstrated other important variables. For example, host factors, antibiotic concentrations at the site of the infection, type of resistance, post-antibiotic effect, pH, and cationic concentrations at the site, active metabolites, and protein binding. That can be used in conjunction with MIC and MBC to assist in determining optional antimicrobial regimens. Now try this quiz. How are MIC and MBC different? MIC is the lowest concentration of an antibiotic that will inhibit growth of a particular bacteria, where MBC is a concentration that would kill it. Part 5. What are their pharmacologic parameters? In pharmacology, it is important to consider the absorption, metabolism, and elimination of drugs. The 30S RIAs are not substantially metabolized. Due to poor oral absorption, aminoglycosides are administered intravenously or intramuscularly and are eliminated unchanged by the kidneys. Tetracyclines can be taken orally, intravenously, or intramuscularly and are eliminated via biliary excretion in the urine and feces. Importantly, tetracycline absorption is markedly reduced when the drug is taken concurrently with multivalent cations like aluminum, calcium, iron, magnesium. These cations chelate tetracyclines and impair absorption. The 50S RIAs can generally be administered orally or topically and are hepatically metabolized. Macrolides are extensively metabolized by the liver, where erythromycin and clarithromycin are especially known to be cytochrome P450 inhibitors. Cytochrome P450 is important for metabolizing other medications as well, and its inhibition can lead to concurrent drug interactions. Azithromycin, however, is not a cytochrome P450 inhibitor. Clindamycin and linezolid are not cytochrome P450 inhibitors, are both metabolized by the liver into inactive metabolites and excreted. Here's another quiz. What macrolides are important considerations when multiple concurrent medications are prescribed? Erythromycin and clarithromycin are cytochrome P450 inhibitors. They're important considerations because they reduce clearance rates when taken concurrently with drugs that are eliminated by the cytochrome P450 system. Let's shift now to pharmacokinetics. Once the drugs are absorbed, they must reach the correct locations at therapeutic concentrations. Bioavailability, distribution, and cerebrospinal fluid or CSF penetration are all metrics that help quantify this. Bioavailability describes the amount of drug that reaches the bloodstream after absorption. Distribution characterizes how much of the drug reaches bodily tissues from the bloodstream, while CSF penetration characterizes how much reaches the central nervous system. The 30S RIAs have generally good bioavailability but minimal CSF penetration. Aminoglycosides have reasonable distribution due to low protein binding and water solubility. Tetracyclines have great tissue penetration and distribution due to their lipophilicity. The 50S RIAs also have good bioavailability with variable CSF penetration. Orally administered macrolides have a bioavailability of 30 to 50% depending on the stability of the particular drug at gastric pH. All macrolides have good penetration, making them well concentrated in tissues and phagocytic cells, but unable to penetrate the CSF well in the absence of meningeal inflammation. Clindamycin has approximately 90% bioavailability after oral administration and distributes well into the body tissues, especially bone. It also has little CSF penetration. Linezolid has excellent bioavailability and readily enters the CSF. As mentioned earlier, aminoglycosides' narrow therapeutic window limits them to inpatient use. Aminoglycoside dosing can be separated into traditional dosing or extended interval dosing with the special considerations for synergistic therapy. Extended interval dosing involves taking one large dose daily. Traditional dosing uses multiple small doses of drug throughout the day. Therapeutic monitoring of aminoglycoside toxicity is measured every 1 to 3 days via serum creatinine and subjective patient assessment of vestibular and auditory function. When used synergistically with other antibiotic agents or in patients with reduced renal function, for example, elderly patients and patients with renal disease who are taking concomitant nephrotoxic drugs, there are lower serum concentrations or target. Part 6. What are common adverse reactions? As mentioned earlier, these drugs can have adverse reactions. Gastrointestinal symptoms are common among oral antibiotics and are caused by gut flora alteration. Aminoglycosides and chloramphenicol are known to be particularly toxic. Two common adverse reactions of aminoglycosides are nephrotoxicity and ototoxicity. Aminoglycosides are capable of filtering across the glomerulus and can accumulate in the proximal tubule cells. This accumulation increases the permeability of those cells, which can lead to acute tubular necrosis. Ototoxicity is caused by inhibition of mitochondrial ribosomes in the cochlear and vestibular cells, resulting in cell death. Cochlear cells are unable to regenerate, so hearing loss is irreversible. However, vestibular cells can regenerate, and balance deficits are sometimes reversed. Rarely, aminoglycosides can antagonize acetylcholine receptors, leading to neuromuscular blockade. This makes myasthenia gravis, or MG, an absolute contraindication to aminoglycosides. Myasthenia gravis is an autoimmune neuromuscular disease that classically presents as muscle weakness that worsens with usage. The disease inhibits the communication at the neuromuscular junction. Normally, acetylcholine is released from the nerve and activates receptors on muscles to initiate contraction. However, in myasthenia gravis, antibodies alter their receptors and interrupt acetylcholine binding. An aminoglycoside neuromuscular blockade would directly compound the existing deficit found in patients with myasthenia gravis. Let's stop for another quiz. Why is myasthenia gravis an absolute contraindication to aminoglycosides? Aminoglycosides can cause a neuromuscular blockade at the acetylcholine receptor, which compounds the pathophysiology of myasthenia gravis. Remember that patients with myasthenia gravis already have antibodies that target those receptors. Now, let's discuss the adverse reactions to tetracyclines and glyxocyclines. Tetracyclines, including glyxocyclines, are generally considered safe, but commonly cause GI symptoms such as nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. Tetracyclines, other than doxycycline, can deposit in calcifying teeth and bone, which can discolor the teeth and stunt the growth in children. Therefore, tetracyclines are contraindicated in children younger than the age of 8, pregnant women, and nursing mothers. Tetracyclines can cross the placenta and can cause accumulation in fetal bone and teeth. This may lead to incorporation into long bones and intermittent transient inhibition of growth and also deciduous teeth discoloration. Relatedly, divalent and trivalent metals can complex with tetracyclines and impair absorption. Dairy products, antacids, and iron pills should not be co-ingested with tetracyclines for this reason. Uncommonly, tetracyclines can also cause hypersensitivity reactions leading to photosensitive rashes. Chloramphenicol has particularly toxic adverse reactions, so it is only recommended as a last resort treatment when less toxic agents are contraindicated. Its adverse reactions include blood dyscrasias like aplastic anemia, thrombocytopenia, and granulocytopenia. Gray baby syndrome and superinfections also occur. Chloramphenicol's blood cell toxicity is due to its inhibition of mitochondrial protein synthesis that causes decreased transferrin receptor expression, which is important in maintaining iron homeostasis. Gray baby syndrome is specific to chloramphenicol and is attributed to a newborn's, especially in prematurity, lack of UDP glucuronosyl transferase to metabolize the drug. It is potentially fatal and characteristically present with hypotension and cyanosis. Macrolide adverse reactions include GI symptoms like nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea, QT prolongation, and hepatotoxicity. GI symptoms are caused by activation of the motilin receptor that promotes intestinal peristalsis. The increased peristalsis leads to diarrhea. Clindamycin's adverse effects are diarrhea, allergic reaction, and neuromuscular blockade. Pseudomembranous colitis from Clostridioides difficile overgrowth is often attributed to clindamycin as well. Linezolid's adverse reactions are bone marrow suppression, peripheral neuropathy, and serotonin syndrome. Bone suppression and peripheral neuropathy are due to linezolid's mitochondrial protein synthesis inhibition. Linezolid also inhibits monoamine oxidase as a side effect. Monoamine oxidase functions to break down monoamine neurotransmitters such as serotonin, so its inhibition can cause increased levels of serotonin. Co-administration of linezolid with other drugs that increase serotonin levels, like selective serotonin or norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, can result in serotonin syndrome. As we discussed, aminoglycosides are well known for their nephrotoxicity and ototoxicity. Interestingly, most toxicities are caused by an increased affinity to their respective cell types, eventually leading to mitochondrial accumulation. Aminoglycoside amine groups have a charge affinity specific to proximal tubule cells in the kidneys, which endocytose the aminoglycosides and transport them into the mitochondria. Once inside the mitochondria, aminoglycosides can exert their ribosomal effects to cause nephrotoxicity. Similarly, aminoglycoside ototoxicity increases in patients who have a point mutation. The A1555 gene mutation in the 12S subunit of the mitochondrial ribosome. This mutation is already associated with non-syndromic deafness and causes an increased ribosomal affinity to aminoglycosides, which further exacerbates the deficit. Here's one final quiz. What drug causes gray baby syndrome? Chloramphenicol is known to cause gray baby syndrome. And that brings us to the end of our discussion on protein synthesis inhibitors. Now, let's recap to see if we've completed our goals. 1. Can you name the two ribosomal targets and the two main classes of protein synthesis inhibitors? 2 main targets for protein synthesis inhibitors are the 30S and 50S components of the prokaryotic ribosomes. Thus, the two main classes of protein synthesis inhibitors are called the 30S ribosome inhibiting antibiotics or 50S RIAs. 2. Are you able to describe the mechanism of action of the 30S and the 50S RIAs? The 30S and 50S RIAs directly interfere with the structure and enzymes necessary for protein synthesis in bacteria. Tetracycline, a 30S RIA, prevents the start codon from binding, and aminoglycosides disrupt translational proofreading of the amino acids. Each 50S RIA interacts with a unique component of the 50S subunit. 3. Can you describe the three most common acquired and transmissible mechanisms of resistance to protein synthesis inhibitors? There's enzymatic inactivation, target site alteration, and efflux pumps. 4. Are you able to explain why aminoglycosides are potently bactericidal in nature, but the tetracyclines are mostly bacteriostatic? Aminoglycosides disrupt translational proofreading of the amino acids, causing premature truncation or inaccurate translation of proteins, killing the bacteria, making them bactericidal. Tetracycline's mechanism of action is reversible, which makes tetracycline a bacteriostatic inhibitor. 5. Can you describe the common clinical uses for protein synthesis inhibitor aminoglycosides and tetracyclines? Aminoglycosides have a broad range of activity across gram-negative organisms, especially the aerobic species, including Pseudomonas and Enterobacteriaceae. They also have some activity against aerobic gram-positive organisms like Staphylococcus aureus, Streptococci, and Enterococci, and are only given intravenously in an inpatient environment. Tetracyclines, doxycycline, and minocycline are commonly used to treat severe pustular acne. 6. Can you name the two most common adverse reactions to aminoglycosides? There's renal and odal toxicity. They're both common adverse reactions to aminoglycosides. And that's it. Armed with our newfound knowledge on protein synthesis inhibitors, let's get back to the patient from the beginning of this episode. You are seeing a 17-year-old female that has concerns about her acne. On examination, you recognize that your patient has severe pustular acne with significant inflammation. You decide your patient would benefit from treatment with oral antibiotic treatment. What antimicrobial agent will you choose, and how will you discuss the side effects with your patient? Based on her presentation and your knowledge of protein synthesis inhibitors, you have decided to prescribe her tetracycline. You explained to her that tetracycline is an antibiotic that will fight the inflammation and reduce the bacteria that are causing most of her trouble. You elaborate that most people tolerate tetracycline without a problem. You also tell her, just so you know, what could happen, some people will have some nausea, vomiting, or diarrhea. Please let me know if these become a problem for you so we can decide together what to do next. And it is important to take the medicine separate from eating or drinking any dairy products. Those foods can make it difficult for your body to absorb the medicine, so you would get much less benefit from it. Before we start you on this, we need to do a urine pregnancy test. We do this for all women of childbearing age, just to be sure. The medicine would have effects on a growing fetus. Your patient thanks you for your explanation and states that she looks forward to seeing the results of the treatment. And that's it for our show. Make sure you like and subscribe if you like what you hear, and remember, your feedback helps us improve. You can enjoy the full BRIC experience online at www.usmole-rx.com, complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, and active learning. So go check that out if you haven't already. Until next time.